and speeding bullets.
Brightest day, blackest night.
Island Comic Con, how are you doing? That's great. Normally, I have to pretend like I didn't hear it and ask a second time, but you guys are ready. Let me bring out your moderator for this panel. He is a co-host of the Angry Geek Show. Please put those paws together for Lewis Perry.
Hi, everybody. You guys having a good con? I didn't hear you. You guys having a good con? Are we ready to go back to the 4077?
Yeah!
All right, before we get started, if you don't work for the con, no videos, no live streaming, okay? But you can take all the pictures you want. Okay, but no live streaming, no videos.
I'm thinking of asking a question
for
my grandmother, who can't be here. Hi,
Grandma. We can ask our panelists, Dad, okay? But then we'll probably have to take the video, break your phone, and do all that. All right, so let's bring out our guests, okay? Ladies first, Hot Lips herself. Loretta Swit!
Try to split us up. Doesn't
wait,
work.
Wait a second. Have a seat, the both of you.
Can we do that again? I haven't heard that much applause since MASH went off the air. Right?
Wait a second.
What an obedient audience. Thank you.
Don't take candidates up here, would you?
Yeah.
Please don't. Yeah, look at them. The minute I said that, all the cameras went. Did I not say the right thing?
Okay.
Let me explain why. First of all, it's a bad shot. You're shooting up our noses. And look at
I beg your pardon. Wait a minute. Hang on one second. I don't care about the pictures, but no profiles. All right? That's the one thing I'm saying.
Oh, God.
So I said ladies first, and Mr. Farr, here.
Yes, I'm so used to playing the part, I came out first, so I know that. I'm sorry, I had a hip replacement, and I got macular degeneration, so first of all, I can't walk, and I don't know who the hell I'm talking to, so.
I'm joined to the good hip, I just want you to know. Joined at the hip, the good one.
Well, we got a packed room here, so if you do have a question, just line up one at a time. Why don't you line up over here so you're not blocking anyone, and then we'll call you over to this camera, okay? So why don't we line up on this side of the wall really quick, and then we'll call you guys over. How about that? Thank you for coming to Rhode Island Comic Con, and how is the con treating you both? Is everything okay?
How is what treating up?
The convention. How's the convention treating you?
The people here are so lovely. So, I'm speaking for both of us. I know because they're just so loving and warm and sweet, and they come up to you, say the loveliest things. It's really a blessed way that Jamie and I live, to hear those people, the responses to MASH and to the characters. It's just, it's lovely to be a part of it.
How many people are from Rhode Island? How many people are from Boston, Massachusetts? What, Worcester, Massachusetts? Agunquit, Maine.
A show of hands. Anybody here from Toledo?
Anybody here from Toledo?
Hey.
Oh, there is. Don't tell them. I probably owe them money. Okay, Lewis, you want to take over and ask
a question?
I will. We got a lineup over there, too.
I know. First, did you have any of the cake?
All of it.
You ate all of the birthday cake?
I had 6 birthday cakes for my birthday. How many people? And And they weren't just birthday cakes. They were works of art. I'm sculpted like the swamp and then the signpost. And I mean, it just, everybody went out of their way to make it so very personal and very special. And it was the best birthday ever. And now I tell the story and I'll tell it really fast. My brother's birthday was the 3rd of November, 6 years before I came along. And my mom said, I wanted my own day. She was pushing and pushing and I wouldn't come out. So on the 4th, I popped out and had my own day. Never had my own day. The celebration started on the 3rd, right? Everybody came, the relatives are there, the presents are open, the cake is gone, everything's gone. And on the 4th, I had no birthday. Yes, right. So I grew up making a big deal out of that day. You know, I would have, as an adult, somebody would say, I won't be in town. Can I take you out to lunch the 3rd? No, no, it's not my birthday. It's like I became a manic about it. So when I come here and I get 6 birthday cakes, you know, on the day, on November 4th. So thank you. And yes, it was wonderful. I ate all of them. Thank you.
Before we get to those questions, I do have a question for both of you really quick. These come from our listeners, the Angry Geek Show listeners, and they knew where I was going to be working with you. First question comes from, trying to think, Tom Polo. He wants a question for you, is about the kiss of you and...
Which one?
Hot
you
lips,
have to be
it.
Specific.
I am going to be specific. The very first
the
kiss.
The finale.
We're going to tie into the finale. The first kiss between Hot Lips and Hawkeye during the shelling. When you read the script, you got the script and you found out you were going to get be kissed and kiss. What was your reaction to that script? And what
Alan
was it like
wrote his? It for us. Alan actually wrote it earlier than we ever got to do it because our executive producer at that point, Gene Reynolds, lovely man, lovely, talented producer, felt it was a little too soon for the audience to accept that relationship. We were so antagonistic, you know, Hawkeye and Margaret. But at a certain point, Alan said, look, they love us. They'll believe us. We know what we're doing. And so he said, go ahead. And I must say, after it aired, Gene called me and he went on and on about how wonderful it was. The characters were Alan and Loretta, or Hawkeye and Margaret, were so real to you all. You were ready to accept what we did. Mm-hmm. And boy, when you're getting shelled at the front, you fall in somebody's arms and you hang on tight. And so it was very believable. And then, of course, when you had that proximity, the respect and the affection was already there. It just kind of bubbled up and bubbled over. So it just was a kind of natural progression. I was thrilled when Alan gave me the script and that we were going to work out, you know, what happened. So it's one of my favorites because it revealed so much about their inner characters that we hadn't seen before, you know.
Okay. Mr. Farr,
yes.
The next question, this one sticks out.
I didn't kiss anybody.
I know, but...
He gave me a birthday cake. We did a show called Birthday Girls, Jamie and I.
The next question is not MASH related. It comes from Jack Purcell from DC Comics. Has to do with Cannonball Run and the Sheik. I'm trying to remember the exact thing. Is what did the Sheik have against wingtip shoes?
Against what shoes?
Wingtip shoes.
I have no idea. I know in MASH we had the wingtip shoes.
Yep.
The Sheik, I have no idea.
You were running around handing out cash to the mafia guys, saying wingtip shoes and just giving them money.
I have no idea. I'll tell you something. There wasn't a sober breath on that entire movie. So I don't even know. this is one of my favorite things that we did. You know, and I forgot which one it was. I think it was probably the second one. The one with Telly Savalas in it, who was the gangster in it. And he's going to bump off all of us, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Burt Reynolds, Dom DeLuise, and myself. And he goes, any last requests? So they had written in the script, you know, for me, couscous, and somebody else with something else. And they didn't have a line for Dean Martin. So I went over and I whispered in his ear. He says, I like that one. So we go down the line, and he says, how about you? And I, couscous. They get to Dean Martin, and he says, okay, any last requests? He says, can I see your wine list?
All right, first question.
Wing tip shoes, I can't help you.
Yeah, he's like, wing tips here. All right, first question. Come on over to the mic. And what's your name?
So mine's Becca. My grandmother's name is Anne, and she gave me a question because she's the one that has watched the show, her whole. So she's 90, she can't be here today. So she wanted me to tell you that MASH is the best TV show ever.
Oh. I agree with her, all right?
And her question was, if there was a particular episode or storyline on MASH that was really close to either of your hearts.
Birthday Girls.
Okay, Birthday Girls.
Birthday Girls.
The one that Loretta just mentioned.
Yeah. Okay.
That was what. But of course, you know what? We did what? Over 200 shows or something?
250.
You know, it's amazing. When Loretta talked about Alan and her having that kiss in there, that was one of the most wonderful things about our series because our characters grew. It weren't the same people in every episode. You got to see different sides of them. You got to see when they were angry. You got to see when they were in trouble. You got to see when they were happy. You got to see. It was probably the best writing, I think, of any of the shows because the characters grew and you grew with them. And I think that's why you became part of our family as we became part of your family. So I think that a lot of these shows, I'm amazed. How about the one, you know, where David Ogden Stiers, Major Winchester, the soldier that died for that moment and then comes back and he wants to know what happened during that time. And that's something that he has to find out about. How about the soldier that was going to die on Christmas Day, you remember?
Yeah, we changed,
and they changed the calendar.
We didn't want the children to grow up remembering the father dying on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And this is against all Hippocratic oaths that you take. Mm-hmm. We changed the time of death. We made it the next day so that it was never going to be Christmas Day. There were a lot of, we did a nose job, which is definitely, is not, we did.
Incidentally. So I swear
We tried, but they wouldn't go for it. They wanted that nose. This man put Toledo on the map.
Yeah.
And Paco's hot dogs. I mean, you know, it just is phenomenal what a family we all became. We know what you feel about us because we feel the same thing about you guys. We feel like it's a big family and people, when some of the things we get in the mail, honestly, should be published. It's like poetry. You're my safe place.
Aww.
You are the safe place I go. You are my comfort zone. Do you know what that means to us? We're doing a sitcom, right? And yet, we're giving that kind of solace, and in return, you're making us feel like $1 million tax-free, you know, so. So, right?
Yes,
right.
Yeah. Your mother's 90 years old?
My grandmother.
Oh, your grandmother's 90. Is she single? I turned 88. I'm
yes, she is.
Oh, he's going to brag about that for a long time. 88.
If you came over and asked her out, she would probably see
okay. She'll have to pick up the check.
Hi.
Okay, next.
What's your name?
Hi, my name's Cindy, and I came here from Florida.
Florida, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, well, Charlotte got canceled, and I was wanting to meet them.
So yeah, that's it.
We're here.
Yeah.
And first of all, Mr. Farr, thank you for the hug the other night. That meant more to me than you will ever know.
Again,
see,
I can't remember
behind my
that
back. I did not see this happen.
I will never forget it. Like another hug from my dad. As you said, your characters got to grow, and the writers were genius with their moments. And like the moment when Charles was being Charles and Colonel Potter said to him, Will Rogers never met you. And I wondered, what are just, not even the story arcs or anything, but what are the moments that the writers just got right for you and your characters that you remember, or a line you ad-libbed, or that was stayed in that really showed who your character was?
For me?
For you, for Margaret, for both
well,
of you.
I would just say that they were so brilliant and they knew us so well and they knew the characters so well. Most of the time, we accepted whatever they put into the scripts. Mm-hmm. That's how wonderful they were. Sometimes we might change a little something, and we would do that at the rehearsal table, because once we committed to the script that we were going to do, we had to stay with that. Right. And when they were shooting it, if we decided we wanted to change something, we used to have to call the front office first to find out if it was all right to change anything in the dialogue. But Loretta would agree that they were just absolutely brilliant.
Yes, the moment that stands out.
Yeah, here's the thing. Every Monday, we had a rehearsal day, which was very unusual. Most shows didn't get that incredibly important time to rehearse. And it had a lot to do with how wonderful the show became. We had that time together, so we would read the script and then take a break, and we would offer our suggestions, comments, or changes, or whatever. You never in a group of actors where one actor will say, "It's a great joke, but I don't think it's mine. I don't think my character would say that. I think Radar would say that, and Gary would say, you know, I thought that. Would you mind if I? No, you should have and." We would give away a joke to an, you know, and we would do that only because the whole was what was important. Mm-hmm. MASH was mm-hmm. the star, and we made that star the biggest, brightest thing we could. So Monday was very important to the communion between actors and producers and writers, very important. So after the second reading, we took a break. The writers would disappear, come back, and have incorporated already some of the changes. And it was the most exciting, the most creative moments of the week, because, and now as far as, extemporaneous shooting and adding something funny. One show, I had a drunk scene. She was a great drunk. I loved Margaret was an Irish drunk, you know. She just absolutely loved the booze. I'm not so think as you drunk I am. She would say things like that. So I had this wonderful drunk scene with Alan and I think Wayne, yeah. And we were in the swamp. I was in the middle, and the two of them were drinking, and we're laughing, and we're making fun of the lipless wonder, Frank Burns, you know, was just making fun of him, and I'm trying to leave that relationship, and I'm flirting with Wayne, and anyway, so we're reveling, and who walks into the swamp but Frank Burns? And he looks at me, shocked, "Margaret, you're drunk." And I say, "Right, Reverend Davidson." Now, that's from Miss Sadie Thompson. As this religious man, Reverend Davidson, winds up attacking Sadie Thompson, but he's a religious man. So I say, "Right, Reverend Davidson," and now Hawkeye and Trapper are laughing. And so Frank Burns goes off in a huff, and we're still laughing. And I looked up and I said, "Who was that?" Well, Alan and Wayne fell off the chairs, and they kept it, and it was just too, it's not in syndication probably because everything gets snipped off, but that was a very funny kind of extemporaneous thing that just dribbled out and we kept laughing. But we were allowed to do that. They had great taste. They knew what was, you know, right to keep in, and they let us do that. They gave us great confidence and great freedom, and we in turn did the same thing with them. It was a real beautiful communion, a real united.
May I add something to that also, to show you how wonderful the producers and writers were. We'd be doing a scene, and there would be a serious scene, and Larry Gelbart or one of our other writers and producers had that wonderful line in there that had a big laugh line, and they decided to take the laugh line out because they thought it would hurt the scene. Rather take the joke that was in there and put it someplace else. It was that funny of a joke because it would take the rhythm of the scene going out. I mean, that's how they were thinking.
They cared. It was about the moments.
Yes, exactly right. Thank you. Want another hug?
Yeah. I'd love another hug.
There were other shows, for example, that would write, quote, Emmy episodes for their start.
Really?
They never did that with us. Whatever we won because we were good in that particular episode, but it wasn't like our Emmy episode, if you understand
right.
what
yes.
I mean by that.
Yes.
And it was always about the quality and the excellence of that show, and just... It was really
why 50 years later,
beautiful.
We're all still watching
talking
it.
About it, too,
and,
and laughing
so
at it.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you.
Hi.
Next.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Kim. So I'm pretty interested in fandom culture through an anthropological perspective. And I've been noticing in the past year or so, especially like on Tumblr, MASH has become super popular. Like I'm seeing like fanfics, fan art, people make like original characters for the show, fan videos, everything. So it's like almost becoming like I'm a millennial. So like my generation, even younger, it's becoming popular. Like how do you feel about your show becoming like super popular with the younger generations even today?
Go
okay,
ahead.
You
go ahead,
okay. I think it's fabulous. The fact that that a situation comedy based at the front lines of a war became a family show, became the best babysitter on television. That kids, that family, the parents were not afraid to watch, the kids could watch that because they were getting life lessons by osmosis. We didn't teach them a fantasy. We showed them life and death.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that those parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, they keep passing these wonderful life lessons on to each generation. So you're here now young, you know, everybody's young to us, but anyway. it is astonishing that some of us have presidents that you didn't, you know? And, luckily, but anyway, so that we are still, we have this common ground of love and life and liberty and wisdom and life, but mostly life that we share as a family.
Yeah.
Mostly because these weren't cardboard characters. These were real people.
Yeah.
Jamie and Klinger and Toledo and all, you all were a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you always will be. That's it.
I just wanted to add also the music in that show.
Mm-hmm.
It was very haunting to children. For some reason, whether they knew what the show was about or not, they heard that theme.
Yeah.
And it drew them to the TV set. And the interesting part about this, I just found out about it some time ago, is that the director, producer
yeah.
of the original MASH show, the movie, mm-hmm. wanted the worst song ever written, okay? The music and also the lyrics. And his son, who was very, very young, wrote the lyrics to that.
Suicide hoping, is painless.
Yeah, suicide
terrible.
Is painless. Yeah, that he thought it would be terrible now. Well, the son made more money off of the song because it's played wherever it is than
the producer,
than the director did, than his father did.
Royalties will out, oh
yeah.
my.
Yeah. So, you know, that again, was an attraction. He got fooled, you know, the producer did, because it was so fitting. As anything else that we did with that show was so fitting,
yeah.
it just fit.
Everything
was
worked.
Comfortable.
Everything worked. The original five, I think we were in love from hello. And it was very cold shooting the pilot. Wayne and I had this theory. We were all bundled up together. It's 5 a.m. in the mountains, and the boys are in Hawaiian shirts, right? Wayne is blue. He's blue. And we're all huddled together, and we got to know each other really well. And we're so how could you not fall in love? You're like, you know, and it was magic from day one. And very shortly after that, we started to feel the responses that these people, these characters, mm-hmm. were getting, and we were feeling the love. In the doing over the years, we began to realize what was happening. It was a phenomenon, what was happening. Wayne said to me one morning, he said, you know, people run into me, they say, keep up the good work. He said, I feel like I'm on a football team. But they responded to the hard work and the good work. And that is so wonderful to say about our society, that they're responding to that goodness, to that positivity. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
May I also add that, you know, MASH in this first season was going to be canceled.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
It was out of 65 shows, it was number 57th in the ratings. It was on opposite the wonderful world of Disney. On Sunday night.
You don't compete with that.
Okay. And so Mr. Paley, who was then the chairman of CBS, said he was going to have to cancel the show. And Mrs. Paley, her nickname was Babe Paley.
Takes a woman.
Yeah. Said she liked the show, and why didn't they move it to another time spot? So he, another man, decided to do what the woman told him to do, and moved it to Saturday night, which became, in television history, the greatest night in the history of television. All in the Family, MASH, Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart Show, and the Carol Burnett Show. Oh. And no one left there. That's what saved our show. And then we became so popular that we became the lead-in to other shows to help them, like WKRP in Cincinnati and other shows. They would use us to lead them in for those.
It was like, to understand it, you're moving into a new neighborhood, mm-hmm. and it takes the neighbors a couple of weeks, if not a couple of months, to get to know and pay attention to get into your groove, so to speak. And one more thing about the music. It is the second most recorded piece of music in our country.
Wow.
You're supposed to say, what's the first?
White Christmas.
The national anthem.
Yeah. Wow.
Is that a credit or what? But yeah. Mandel, it is haunting, haunting. And it's right about the kids. For some reason, they respond to, I have a letter from somebody. This little kid was in the high chair with the spoon, loving the music, would react every time the show came on. You know, it is, there's something magical about that music.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
I saw you asked the question.
Yeah.
Next.
You two and Hawkeye, you're complete icons on Tumblr. Seriously, so many people love you. It's always like fascinated me.
A fun fact: my playlist is completely bonkers, and MASH is on it. Yeah, it is. It is on there, right up there with the Banana Splits theme and Knight Rider. It's on there. It's on there. Hi, what's your name?
Hi. I'm Lucian. Hi. Firstly, I just wanted to say to you, thank you so much for creating this world that we got to be a part of. Really. It was so great. You said before it was just a sitcom, or I don't think you diminished that way, but you said it was a sitcom. But you know,
that was not my feeling.
No, of course.
But I mean, basically, when I go to the producer and ask for something a little more gravitas or whatever, it'd say it's a sitcom. No, it's not, Gene. I'd say it's there's something more going on here.
Well, whatever the struggle was that produced what you produced, it was so far ahead of its game. It was crazy. You were doing things like not using laugh tracks, shooting in black and white, dealing with civil rights, women's rights issues, anti-war. All in a way that wasn't pandering to anybody. Like, nobody ever felt pandered to by MASH, but we felt enlightened by it. That's a really hard thing to do, and I think that's part of its success. Yeah, but I did have a question. I grew up in LA. I'm an LA kid. My mom was in the industry. It never occurred to me that Malibu Creek State Park was 15 miles from my house. That was Korea to me. So, even though the magic of Hollywood was not very magical for me as a kid, but for some reason, it never occurred to me I could just walk around the exterior locations. So I did that finally as an adult with my son in my 40s. I got to do that. It was like fantastic. I'm wondering when the last time that either one of you were at Malibu Creek State Park in the exteriors.
Well, you don't.
I live near that area, but I haven't been back there at all. That entire back lot for Fox, they shot a lot of movies there besides just MASH in Korea.
Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, Planet of the Apes was shot there. Yeah. Jesse James with Henry Fonda and Tyrone Power was shot there. That's in the 30s.
Yeah.
They used to have a cyclorama that was out there in a big concrete area to do miniatures for battleship scenes that they have there. So that was quite a location for many of their outdoor movies that they had.
Yeah, wow, I didn't realize
The motion picture home is also close by. And my mom was there towards the end of her long life. She passed at 106.
Wow.
Her favorite. As a joke, you know, like an interviewer would say, and who's your favorite on MASH, Mrs. Sweet? Jamie Farr. Ma, you say next to my daughter, Jamie Farr. No, Jamie is my favorite. And then one day the gang did Good Morning America or one of those things, and there's Jamie and me and Mike, I think, and maybe Alan. Anyway, we're all in an SVU going back to the hotel. The phone rings, it's my brother, and he says, Jamie was the best dressed, you know, at the show. who is this? As if my brother. I said, you mean, of course, next to your sister. No, Jamie was the best dressed. He was the best in my family. He was the favorite in my family.
I have to tell you, I used to visit her at the motion picture home because I don't live too far from there. I'm expecting to go there very soon as myself, as a matter of fact.
Is Nell.
Yeah, Nell. At any rate, I'd visit her, and I'd say, Nell, is there anything I could get you at all? She said, what you could get me, what I need, you possibly couldn't ever get me. And I said, how about vanilla ice cream? Okay, she said. And I give her vanilla ice cream. She was a wonderful, wonderful lady, and just amazing. And we always had Loretta and Nell over at Christmas time.
She called the house Jamie's Castle. Yeah. My, it's a house. She says, no, it's a castle. But it does, you know, there's a long driveway that kind of goes up, and so the house sort of emerges, you know. I thought, you know, she's right. It is a castle.
She locked herself in our bathroom one time. We had tried to get her out. How did we get her out? Did we have to call the fire department?
Yeah, we called the fire department. So many memories. You don't want to go there.
Wow. Well, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next. Mr. Farr, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
What was your first reaction when they told you, okay, we got this role for you, but you need to wear a dress?
Well, that's not the way it happened.
Yeah, that ain't the way it happened.
Okay.
That's when I heard it. What happened was that I've been a struggling actor for many years and been lucky in some areas and everything. And this particular time in my life, I wasn't acting at all. It's that Bob Hope said, one day you're eating the chicken, the next day you're plucking the feathers, you know. I was plucking the feathers at that time. And I got the phone call from my agent and said, Gene Reynolds is producing a new TV series called MASH from the movie. And I had done a F-troop for Gene, a one-day job on it, and Gene was directing, and he used to put the names of good actors or bad actors or actors that he liked or whatever it is in a black book, and something came up and he said that Gene Reynolds wants you to play in this show. It's a one-day part, $250 for the day. So I said, great, I'll take it. So I went into I didn't even know what the part was. I went into the studio, I hadn't seen the script, and he put me into this trailer that had a woman's Army Corps uniform in it with these huge high heels. So I thought I was dressing with an actress. And he says, no, those are yours, put them on. The heck kind of part is this? So I put them on, everything fit, and of course he started laughing because of the hairy bow legs. Took me out on stage
tonight. He has the legs for that uniform.
At any rate, everybody started laughing. I hadn't even seen the dialogue or anything else like that. And I just had, I think, about a couple of lines in it. Cyril Book, who was on...
He was a general. He was always
after... Yeah, the general.
Yeah,
but he was on
Margaret.
A series.
Yeah.
At any rate, I had two lines or something like that. And that was it. I thought that was the end of my appearance on it.
Keep trying, Gary.
Yeah. Right, yeah. So at any rate, I came on for one day, and they liked me. And the first year, I did, I think, 4 or 5 of their shows. The second year, I did 13 of their shows. And then the third year is when they put me under contract, when I became a regular on it. So as I always like to say, I came on for one day and stayed for 11 years.
Ain't bad.
Thank you for answering that. Hi, what's your name?
How you doing? My name is Paul Iannuzzi. I'm from Connecticut, originally from Providence, Rhode Island. I had a quick question for you in regards to, I know I spoke to you earlier, Ms. Swift, about what was your favorite episode? My favorite episode, as somebody who's watched every episode probably, I don't know, 36 times.
Sure.
Was the one with you with the dog that got hit by the car.
Yes.
You invoked such emotion to me as an animal lover. It really rattled me.
Again, back to the writers, they didn't just pick our brains, mm-hmm. they tore our hearts
sure.
out. They searched into, I told you, mm-hmm. I was doing yoga, seriously, for a while, and the next thing you know, this in the script, I'm doing a yoga position in my tent, in walks Frank Burns, grabs me, hello, you little yogi, or whatever he called me, you know, yoga love. They always used what Gary would be playing the drums. Everything that they knew about us would tend to get incorporated in some way,
sure.
which is what kept us so real.
Mm-hmm.
We have Bill Christopher. They just found out things about us by hanging out with us too. But it was just an easy thing for us to incorporate. They knew about my activism, and they knew that having a dog, a camp dog, get run over by a Jeep is gonna get a rise out of me. It's just, woof, you know. but they were brilliant in that way. One day, I said to one of the associate producers that I wished I had a chance to show that Margaret had a sense of humor. And he said, what are you kidding me? You're so funny. No, I'm funny. I'm talking about like making a joke, having a sense of humor, showing that. And I turned around, he was gone. He's writing the episode right already. and it was wonderful. My an old friend from one of the nursing staff met me, and she found me so changed. She said, you used to be so much fun. You used to joke all the time. And she kind of revives that in me. And the next thing you know, there's this funny scene with Alan. We're in the supply tent, and we're making jokes. And I'm making jokes, and he looks up and says, Margaret, you made a joke.
No,
I mean, it wasn't a great joke, but it was a joke, he says. You know? And you know, do we have enough sulfur? Yeah, it's in the living room next to the end table. No, sofa. And we had this silly, wonderful thing. And it all came out of my saying, I wish we could see that. And we did immediately. It was an amazing thing, creatively, as actors, we can tell you, just the most exciting thing in your career.
Wonderful. Mr. Farr, did you have a favorite episode? My favorite one with you is with the hang glider.
Oh, yeah.
I do you know how many pairs of fuzzy pink slippers?
Listen, I have them now. Okay, so those
you
are
have
great.
Your own, you have a pair.
Just
right,
in case.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kept the original fuzzy pink slippers.
You should.
That's
I work with the elderly, and a lot of times for movement disorder, and a lot of times, sometimes they get down. And we'll revert back to conversations about something funny. And I have a TV in my gym, and sometimes that goes on loop, that reel of you going across with the hang glider, just to kind of boost some things up, you know?
So. You know, that one is one of my favorite ones. But the other one, I have to tell you, this was the biggest surprise ever. Is the one where General MacArthur is going to come, and they keep hiding me, you know, hiding me, and they're all ready to go, and they, with the cameras, and they're getting the tent and everybody ready for him, and he's going to come by and spend some time and all this stuff, and of course he comes and he arrives, and they're all everybody's waiting there. Of course I'm not among them, and he salutes and keeps going past them, and then you see him look at something, and then he stops and he salutes, you know, and I'm in the Statue of Liberty out.
Yes.
I have to tell you, I was in Beverly Hills the next day after that show had aired. I just happened to be walking around in the around there, and people in their cars and bus drivers and taxi drivers were honking the horn at me, waving at me. People actually fell off of their chairs and sofas, you know, laughing at that thing. That was one of the biggest. I mean, how the hell could I have possibly made a you know, a Statue of Liberty? But who cares? The joke was such a wonderful joke. It just was just perfect. That's one of my favorites also.
Well, one of my favorites of his is with McLean Stevenson. He goes in this little peasant outfit. He's got a little babushka, you know, on it. Little peasant skirt, and he's pregnant.
Yeah.
Now McLean, very seriously, straight face, cigar, says, "It is my opinion, Klinger, that no one is going to believe that you're pregnant." I mean, we're screaming on the floor. You know how difficult sometimes it was to rehearse.
Oh, gosh. Was
Harry Morgan was an imp. Oh, he was. He would, on Harry first, though, do the solo first, because it's easy, right? And he would, the thoroughgoing professional, right? And then turn around the camera on, you know, the animals, the us. And
the animals.
We couldn't get through it. You know, he'd make us laugh. He'd be twinkling. Now, my favorite memory of one of those times, we're in the corner in Potter's office. We usually ended up crazy in Potter's office. Now that it's hot, the day is gone, we're exhausted, we're sweating, and we're crazy. So we have now Potter's office, and we have the director sitting on a high chair in the corner, crying, saying, "Please, people, please, please, people, please, I have to shoot this." And we're, and BJ, Mike Farrell, who is 6'4 and a Marine, was lying flat on the floor with tears jetting out of his face. He could not stop laughing. I mean, that's the kind of insanity you had at the end of the day in Potter's office, because Harry Morgan, oh, what, he was a devil. Oh, he could make us, laugh or cry. It was up to him. Whatever he wanted to do, he would play us.
Never wanted to have all seven of us together.
That was the worst thing.
There was one time we were in the mess tent together. This was when McLean Stevenson was there, and we started laughing. You know, and they were getting upset because, you know, time is money and that. So they called the producers down, all right, to scare us and that. And as we started to go, the producers started laughing. So then they had to call the executives at the front of the office, the studio, and they came on the set and they started laughing. So the director said, "What the hell with it? Let's just go home. We'll do this tomorrow." You know, they couldn't scare us.
Thank you so much for answering my questions. You're truly gifts. Thank you.
No, very often. Dominic, remember Dom?
Yeah,
Dom was our camera operator. He even directed, I think, eventually. But he would laugh so hard the camera would shake, would have to redo the scene. I mean, it was, honestly, some of the stories sound like a comic book, but it was that real. It really was, it tickled us as well as tickling the audience, you know, just... wonderful. When we were talking about David and memorable things that he did, he had that wonderful episode where he taught the soldier concerto for one hand.
Yeah,
the soldier had lost a hand, and he gave him the music so that he could play on the one hand. But David had speeches like, you know, "I studied piano as a child, and I learned the notes and how to play, but I didn't have the gift. You have the gift.
Yeah.
Use it. Don't, you know," and it's just, he was, oh, please, David. David was such an actor. He could go out on the weekend and do King Lear, like my friend here did King Lear, you know. But they were actors that I worked with. Actors. Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Oh, we're running out of time?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is what I'm going to do. I know. I'm going to put. Ma'am, I know it's your birthday. So birthday weekend.
No, it isn't.
It's your birthday weekend.
No.
This, in my family, we do weekend. So it's your birthday.
Month.
You do month. So we do have. Okay.
November is all right. My month.
Birthday month. So we do have another panel coming in. We have three people. So instead of me getting in trouble, instead of you guys getting in trouble, I'm going to let the audience pick which one of those three get the next question. Hey, I'm not going to be the bad guy.
Is he bad? You're bad.
All three.
Really quick.
We've always been troublemakers.
All right, really quick.
I'm Mike from Staten
Island. You're done. Go.
I'm Mike from Staten Island. I'd just like to say, you were saying it was a sitcom. It was considered the first dramedy.
Yes. That's correct, yes.
And I'll just make it quick. My thing is, what was the reaction of the cast when you were in the operating room and Radar walked in and told you about the choppers, Henry Blake's chopper going down? Because I know you didn't know about that scene.
It's all true. It's not urban urban legend. No, because Mac was actually leaving the show, they didn't want us walking around all week in a slump. So they left off the last page that they may or may not use it. It's called the tag, and they can chop it off and not use it. But they wrote it because they thought it was a way to show what happens in a war. And it was an opportunity, since he was leaving anyway, let's demonstrate something serious here. So they left that page out where Radar, Gary, comes in and reads it. Gary gets handed the page, and they were very close. And he goes in, and we're there, and he reads that message that our lovely commander just got killed. And what you saw was, I have to tell you, was what you would have seen whether we knew it or not. That was real. We loved Mac, and you would have had that reaction from all of us. And the way Gary read it, choking, and, you know, because prior to this, when Mac is getting on the chopper and he salutes Gary, I mean, it tears your heart out. Mm-hmm. It's a true story. We did get that page. And,
but we the only but, ones, the cast were the only ones that knew it. So the reaction that you saw from all the other people in there, that was the first time they heard it.
What you saw was real, the reactions from those people. But my point is, honestly, you're talking to a group of incredible actors. It would have been that way, you know. It just wouldn't have been as painful for us, maybe. But it was... And it was an amazing decision, and the overwhelming response from people saying, how dare you kill our, you know, and they had the opportunity to write back. We didn't. The war did. You want to take a stand. That's what you're going to fight, you know, and so it was a wonderful opportunity.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Okay, come on. Oh, he's going to go to your table.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, why don't you make a personal appearance? And then you can ask.
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Clara. I'm from Arizona, actually. So.
Wow. Okay.
So I actually still watch your show on reruns and stuff like that. I actually have them on DVD, and I play them while I'm working at home. And while I always have them on the background, when I get to your last episode you ever did, I usually end up having to stop what I'm doing to watch it because it's so bittersweet. How hard was it for you guys to do that last episode knowing that was the end?
Bittersweet is a great word for that. I had to look. Harry was Harry was everything to me and Margaret. I mean, really, we lived very close together. We saw each other during the weekend. On weekends, his wife and I were buddies. It's just, I'd cook, he'd cook, they'd cook, would go out, whatever. We were very, very close. So I had to look into those blue eyes and say, you dear sweet man, I'll never forget you. And I'm choking up now because I miss him still. It was tough. It was a body blow for us to those two cigar-smoking buddies every day. You know, it was incredibly difficult. The directors kept saying, please, everybody, stop crying now. Just stop. Okay, we're going to go again for another take. Nobody can cry. Now, stop it. We spent a life together. And as evidence, we're still living that family life. We know each other.
So, thank you very much.
Everybody, thank you for coming. Please go down to their table, get a photograph, say hi, get an autograph. Thank you for coming to the panel at Rhode Island Comic Con 2022.
Hi, my name is Rocky Balboa.
Are you ready?